Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Hello, lovely listeners. Welcome to the Just Interesting podcast, the weekly show where we discuss things that we find just interesting. And joining me today, it's the wonderful Robin.
Hello. Thank you, Alex. That's a very, very kind introduction. Where's Martin today?
Well, Martin, last time I checked, he said that he's no longer doing the podcast, and instead he's retraining as an AI programmer, which honestly, I don't blame him. But I think that he's, as soon as Daniel phones him up, he's going to be gone in a heartbeat. He can't leave that work behind him. Sadly,
it's too important.
Being
it's too
Daniel,
big.
Daniel Radcliffe's body double, for those of you who don't know. But coincidentally, Robin, this week on the podcast, I did want to talk about AI because it's kind of like become a buzzword. Has it become a buzzword? An existential threat? And I guess this is following along from a recent discussion that we had over on our Patreon series, A Little More Interesting, where we discussed Sora, which is OpenAI's recent foray into video artificial intelligence. That was pretty scary. So this week I thought we could discuss where artificial intelligence, whether it's OpenAI's artificial intelligence or other companies' artificial intelligence, where it will be in the next year and possibly in the next decade. What does this hold for humanity? But Robin, before we jump into that, would you care for a riddle?
I'd love a riddle. I'd love it. I love your riddles. I can't do them, but I love them.
Robin, don't pretend. I know that you hate the riddles, and it's your least favorite part of all of this. But I don't care, because I'm going to tell you it anyway.
Okay. Excellent. That's the spirit.
Here's your weekly riddle. Buzzing little hummer, busy all the summer. No time to play, no time to shirk, because no man can do hard work. What am I?
I felt so confident about that until the end.
Do you want me to give you another go? Should I read it again?
Yeah, read it. Read it one more time, and then...
Buzzing little hummer, busy all the summer. No time to play, no time to shirk, because no man can do her work. What am I? Well, have a think on that, Robin, and I'll come back to you at the end of the episode, and I will remember it this time. I will remember. But yes, before we move on, did we want to say a big extra special thank you to everyone who is supporting us over on patreon.com? And as well as our lovely YouTube members, of course.
Of course, yeah, our lovely YouTube members and Patreon supporters. And especially, I would like to say thank you to Amy Licious, Cindy Hafner, James, Rashad Najar, Caleb Wilkerson, Kurt Jones, John Baker, Janie, Henny Ruffle, The Super Show Podcast, Nicholas Dill, Emmett Tapia, Ahmad, Peaswad, Josh Tromatek, A Filthy Casual, and Simon Workman for all of their outstanding silver and gold tier support. You are amazing. Thank you all so much.
And getting your name read with Robin's deep, rich, timbrous voice is you can't put a price on it, really. But we have managed to. So if you'd like to hear your name read out in Robin's voice, then feel free to head over to our Patreon, where there's a bunch of other things you get as well, including our, as we previously mentioned, our weekly A Little More Interesting series, where there's over 100 episodes in the back catalogue now, so lots to get sunk into. Yes, and Robin, before we discuss the main topic, I was just wondering, do you have any favourite comments from the past week? either on our channel or on our second channel, Uncovered.
Yes, I do. And thank you for inviting me to share, because our last episode of the podcast, The Scariest Answers to the Fermi Paradox, generated a lot of discussion. It was good. People were engaged with that one. It is. It's quite a profound topic.
It's a good discussion, yeah.
Yeah. And I one comment caught my eye in particular, which was from Microtech 5871. And I thought, of all the things to pick up on in this podcast episode, this was the thing I expected the least to generate a comment. Okay. But Microtech 5871 says, "Our ant overlords are listening to the radio waves of this podcast and are not happy with Alex's hot take that ants don't think." Yeah. You're right. That could be it.
I did.
That could be the straw that breaks the camel's back of the ant overlords who come in and just stomp us.
For those who didn't catch it, I very flippantly suggested that ants don't think anything. I'm sure they do think some things. Don't they communicate by like throwing up in each other's mouths, or am I thinking of something else there?
Whatever your kink is, Alex, I'm not going to brain on your parade.
But no, I think the example I was using there was thinking about like maybe we just don't see alien races because they're too far beyond our comprehension. Much like an ant might look at a skyscraper and not realize that that was built by another race of beings. They just think it's part of nature or their natural environment because it's so big.
Which I think is a great analogy for our inability to imagine what we can't comprehend. I think that was really good.
Thank you. But I followed it up with a very, I guess you would say it's discrimination against ants. And I would like to apologize to all ants listening to the podcast. I apologize. I'm learning and I will try to do better in future.
Good. I think we're in the clear now. I think the ants will forgive us. Thank you, Alex.
Thank you. Thank you.
When Martin said he was studying AI, maybe he meant ants' intelligence.
Nailed it. Well, on the same episode, these comments really made us laugh, and we just kind of, I felt like obligated to mention them. Mm. But Mist of Files 2 said, "Sorry, but I have to unsubscribe. This podcast is too interesting, and you said it was only just interesting." Which was a lovely comment, thank you. However, Bobby Bobstar 1496 replied to them saying, "You plank, what an absolute helmet." And I feel like maybe you misread the original comment, or maybe you actually hate our podcast. But either way, I feel like your hearts are both in the right place here. But there's some wires that have been crossed there. But either way, we found the second follow-up comment. Just really classic insult. It's great. You plank.
I haven't heard anyone use plank as an insult for so long, and helmet as well. Like, what a fantastic insult. I love that. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
And yeah, like you say, share the love with each other. Don't misunderstand each other, please.
Yeah.
And thank you for your support. It means a lot to have people defend us, even against things that are a joke.
I also wanted to mention another comment. This is from James Linton 17, and this is on our most recent Patreon exclusive episode. However, it doesn't really matter what the subject of that episode was, because he says, "Are we still doing the thing where we watch these videos? As I've worked these Patreon exclusives into my weekly self-care routine, I enjoy watching these while having my salt bath or face mask. Perfect way to relax after a long day at work." That's lovely. Wow. That you listen to our podcast whilst you're unwinding.
Yeah, that's a really kind compliment.
Yeah. But also, never had a salt bath. You haven't put bath salts in a bath?
No, I don't understand. I genuinely don't understand what they're supposed to do.
I'd be lying if I said that I understood what they did as well. But yeah, you put them in, they smell nice. I don't know what else to tell you. I think they make your skin feel nice or something. But But the question's out there now. What does everyone do when they're listening to the podcast or any other podcast, actually? Ooh. It's always interesting to find out.
But yeah, actually, one question we've never asked is, what other podcasts do you listen to in conjunction with ours? It'd be nice to see what the kind of general field of interest is of people.
Yeah, that's a great, great question. But Robin, shall we get on to the meat of the episode and discuss artificial intelligence?
Oh, yes, please.
So, artificial intelligence, the hot potato, the buzzword of 2023, and looking likely to be 2024 as well. What are your thoughts on this, Robin? Experiencing this over the last year or two, having seen what we've seen with ChatGPT, OpenAI, and very recently Sora AI, Are you scared about the future of artificial intelligence, or do you think that worries about it at the moment anyway are a bit overblown going into this discussion?
This is a very, that's a big question, to be honest, and I'm glad you asked it, because I think this will keep us going for the whole episode, just trying to answer that one question. I think overall, I am scared. I am concerned. And my major concern, I think, comes from the fact that I think this is a classic example, yet another in human history, of a new technology, the consequences of which we can't understand because it's new, developing faster than the ethical and philosophical debates, and most importantly, the regulations are developing around it. And I think that's what scares me. But in particular, AI is absolutely, at the moment it seems, completely in the hands of the free market. Because it's software rather than hardware, it's so easy for people to get access to. Unlike, say, the other existential threat of recent history, which is the nuclear bomb, which only certain governments with the right resources in certain countries around the world were capable of making, and they made it under the supervision of the government. You know, it wasn't, nuclear weapons were created by governments as weapons with the intention of not using them. So as terrifying as nuclear weapons are, and that's a separate discussion, maybe we'll have in a different podcast, at least they were controlled. AI, I'm worried by the fact that there doesn't seem to be any control over it. What about you?
Well, so you've just compared artificial intelligence to the nuclear bomb. So I feel like we should maybe say, for those of you who, like, lots of people may not be super, super kind of keeping up to date on the latest developments in AI, so they might not really understand what is the big deal with it. They've seen ChatGPT. It can say a few things. It can help out. But what's the big threat with AI? Why are we talking about this big, scary thing, comparing it to nuclear bombs? So, yeah, I mean, I think the big thing is that OpenAI's CEO and some of their executives said in October of last year that AI will be able to do any job within the next 10 years. And I think that's what, is that what we're talking about mainly? The kind of humans becoming obsolete angle? And that is the kind of existential threat to us?
Yes. And I think also, at least in the run-up to that point, the way that AI now, as of last week, with Sora video, which you mentioned at the beginning of the episode. In fact, this single company, OpenAI, damn them, they're going to go down in history as the people who ended the world. With AI video, deepfakes, AI audio, and ChatGPT, which even when it's used in good faith, there's that phenomenon where it lies to you because it wants to give you an answer, you know, that they've identified already, this weird phenomenon that they can't eliminate, where because it's compelled by its very nature to give you an answer, if it can't find one, it will just make one up. And between those things, we're already in the information age, which has sadly in recent years seems to have become the mis or disinformation age. So even before we reach the point where AI is capable of replacing every human doing the thing that gives them a livelihood and allows them to survive, society could go to hell in a handcart because bad actors will abuse the power of AI to disinform, misinform the population. And we've seen it happen without AI just in the past 10 years.
Yeah.
Right? Thanks to software and computing and the internet. So imagine what it's going to be like with AI and deepfakes.
I mean, that is a good point. Playing the devil's advocate, you can say that we have already had enough technology to do this sort of thing and society hasn't collapsed. So for example, the fact that it's an election year and a lot of the predictions about AI are that in this year, we're going to see unprecedented levels of misinformation, you know, especially with things like Sora video AI. If someone gets access to that, then they can generate realistic footage of Joe Biden punching a child, etc. You know, Donald Trump literally shooting someone on Fifth Avenue.
Yeah, well, yeah.
So, however, like videos have been misrepresented in past elections. Videos have, like, you know, videos can be cleverly edited and have been yes. in the past to construe something that is not reflective. Just the other day, what was it? There was a British politician going over to Britain, but was it Sadiq Khan, the mayor of London?
It was the mayor of London, yeah, misspoke.
He misspoke and he said that he was trying to say we are anti-Semitic, but he said we are anti-Semitic and then immediately corrected himself. And the Conservative Party in America, essentially the Republicans, clipped that moment and then edited out the bit where he corrected himself and then posted that. So is that not, in effect, kind of the same thing?
You're right. Actually, you're right. And that's what gives me concern, because it's something that we're already doing without the help of AI.
So this will just make it way easier and way worse.
Yeah, effectively. And only because, as I said, there doesn't seem to be any regulation around it at the moment. These things, in theory, I think, were relatively easy to contain. I'm not going to say you can prevent it, but you can contain it if you regulate it. But there is no regulation.
OpenAI as well have been talking about, you know, wanting to make sure that this is safe technology and they work with regulators and they're gently encouraging regulation to catch up with them and stuff. But I'm just thinking, what regulation could possibly exist to protect this? Yep. Like, because ultimately, they built that video artificial intelligence. The only regulation that could be safe would be to not allow that to happen to begin with. But they clearly made it for a purpose. It's the purpose on its own that people are saying is unsafe.
Yeah, you're right. That make sense? Really good point. Yeah.
People talk about regulation with AI, but they seem to be at odds with each other right from the outset. Like, if you want to regulate AI, it's so it doesn't exist.
Yeah, AI by its very existence. Again, I guess this is why I leapt to the perhaps unfair comparison with a nuclear weapon. Like, there's only one reason you make a nuclear weapon. It's not like if you had regulation in place to contain it, it would be all right. It was like, it has one purpose, one purpose only. And it's the same with a lot of this stuff. It's there. It's being built by these companies who are for-profit companies with one purpose in mind. And there's no real regulation you can introduce to prevent that. So the genie's out of the bottle. So now it's a question of, will AI replace people's jobs? How fast will it happen? And can it be contained in such a way that the transition into an era where AI, what was it, within 10 years we'll be able to do anyone's job, was what the CEO of OpenAI said.
Yeah.
Because other specialists, economists and sociologists, have done studies for years now. Before we reach this point with AI video, AI audio, AI artwork, so going back nearly a decade, scientists are predicting AI will replace people by the end of the century, some by 2050, others, I think, by 2040. So it's just kind of, it just seems to be accelerating, that deadline, so to speak, of when AI will replace or be capable of replacing humans. And so the question, I guess, that you have to ask is not will AI replace humans, but will business leaders allow it to replace humans?
Well, I mean, I think yes, absolutely. I mean, I can only speak anecdotally, but I know the place I work at bloody is loving the idea of AI. And
of course they are.
And I'm sure many people's companies are looking for any excuse to implement AI under the guise of making, you know, their employees' lives easier and helping out with workloads and stuff. And yes, to an extent, making work more efficient, being able to accomplish more with the employees that you have with the use of new technology. But you have to worry at a certain point, at what point are the people just redundant and the companies are going to look for ways to reduce their workforce because of the efficiencies that AI has introduced. In fairness, Sam Altman, he said that in regards to AI replacing people's jobs, every technological revolution affects the job market. I'm not afraid of that at all. In fact, I think that's good.
Of course he isn't.
He's the CEO, isn't he? In fact, I think that's good. I think that's the way of progress and we'll find new and better jobs. And again, kind of playing devil's advocate here, but there have been innumerable technological innovations over the last 100 years, 150 years. And that has been the case every single time. When there has been like an advancement in technology, more jobs have cropped up, not necessarily to replace those jobs, but it hasn't reduced the amount of jobs available on the market. Do you know what I mean? It could certainly displace a huge amount of people in like their job market. People would need to be retrained. And if that happens quick enough, then that could be scary because suddenly you've got millions of people out of work.
This is the problem, isn't it? And this is what it comes down to is your faith in humanity. And I think you can look at history and you can be a glass half empty or a glass half full type of person. Sorry, glass half empty or glass half full type of person. And so there's a statistic here from an article by the United Nations Department of Economic and Social Affairs, which was written before OpenAI came around and made their prediction about jobs being replaced within 10 years. And they summarize estimates that claim 80% of jobs are at risk of being automated by AI and machines in the next couple of decades. 80%. So that's not total, 100%, but it's 80%. However, they respectfully disagree and say that we think history teaches us that industrial revolutions don't reduce jobs to that extent because they increase productivity, which actually can encourage employment. If an employer says, hey, my individual workers are producing more goods or more product, whatever that product is, could be a service, so I can make more profits per worker, which allows me to employ more people, which will make me, because they're now more productive thanks to new technology, they actually will do more. So there's an argument that with new technologies, certain businesses can grow even faster and therefore actually would hire more people. And because technology allows people to be more productive and reduces the skill set required, it makes certain jobs more open to lower skilled people. Which that's is obviously, true, on the one hand, it's kind of scary, but on the other hand, it's kind of good. And the UN article cites one example, which is comparing the 1950 US census with the 2016 US census, or a study in 2016, out of 270 occupations listed in the 1950 census, only one had disappeared due to automation by 2016. Do you want to know what that job was?
I'm trying to think. No, I don't know. Yeah, no, I don't know. I'm not sure.
Elevator operator.
Sure. Yeah, okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think there are even still some fancy apartment buildings in the big cities in New York. That still have someone on the lift. Yeah, that's encouraging that recent history suggests that despite massive technological improvements, it'll be something, some random job that gets replaced totally. So that's putting a good spin on it. However, there's another side of things, which is, say, John Maynard Keynes, you know, the famous economist.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course.
Keynesian economics. He was British, active in the interwar period, and he kind of founded an economic theory that more or less dominated the world, the Western world, and therefore the global economy until the 1970s when the neoliberals started replacing him. And he came up with the term technological unemployment, which was a way of identifying his term to identify a certain amount of unavoidable unemployment that will always exist because new technologies are constantly developing and putting people out of work. And again, I think if you're a glass half empty person, you would look at that and say, oh, great. So it's a problem. It's definitely going to be a problem. AI is going to put a load of people out of work. Or you can look at it from a glass half full perspective and say, oh, it's a phenomenon that always exists, that will always exist. The human race can't stop it from happening because we're always inventing new things.
I mean, I do kind of think like that. Like, again, it goes back to the regulation argument, but that's not, we can't regulate this out of existence. This is not, again, it's like, if we can build it, we will build it because that's what we do.
Yeah. And the prediction for the AI industry is that by 2030, or up until 2030, every single year, the AI industry in America alone is going to grow by 38% each year. It's currently worth $120 billion, and they think it's going to grow by 38% every year until 2030. And, you know, by that point, we might have reached artificial general intelligence, and the AI will take over and rule us all, in which case, you know, why bother measuring the growth? It'll be our it'll be our master and we'll be slaves.
And also, forget the space race. This is the new frontier for like massive companies, isn't it? Like, this is, You've got OpenAI competing. This is like the next kind of the next big thing, I guess. You know, Meta and Apple are currently competing in VR and AR headwear and stuff to be that next big technology. But meanwhile, you've got OpenAI, you've got Google, you've got Microsoft all competing with their own artificial intelligences, as well as like other companies as well. At the moment, I guess OpenAI is currently in the lead in regards to the technology. Whether that will stay the same, we don't know. But the fact that there is heavy competition, competition drives innovation, competition drives, you know, further and faster technological advancements. So a lot of these predictions, I almost worry that they're too conservative as well. Especially as AI starts to be used to improve the AI. Then we're currently then we're approaching singularity territory. I don't think that's going to happen in the next 10 years.
But it's funny you should say that, because there's a researcher called, I'm going to get her name wrong, Aheya Kotra, who works for a nonprofit organization called Open Philanthropy. In 2020, she published one of the most detailed studies of AI ever. And she predicted that a transformative AI system, in other words, kind of something close to general artificial intelligence, will become possible and affordable by 2050. And that was in 2020. A couple of years later, 2022, she updated her study and brought it down to 2040. So just within 2 years, she completely gutted her estimate. So that could get even shorter. Like you just say, particularly now that AI
becomes 2030. Yeah.
It's funny because also there was a futurist who was speaking in 2015. His name's Jacob Morgan, and he wrote a book called The Future of Work. And he was commenting on how technology had changed work and how it would continue to change work. And this was before AI really became a buzzword. But he said, in the past, businesses had the ability to be late adopters. In fact, many of them were. They waited to see what would happen with new technologies before adopting them. Oh. They would often wait several years. But now, late adopter is just another way of saying out of business. His point being that companies are increasingly not just choosing to, but having to adopt the latest technology as fast as possible in order to remain competitive, even more so than ever before in human history, according to him, of course. Maybe he's being a bit pessimistic. So your point just there about the possibility that competition will drive AI's progress even faster than ever before, there's the kind of concomitant problem of companies will be adopting it, consuming it, you know, as not even developing it, but whoever brings out the latest AI system, companies around the world will be like, yeah, we'll take that, because they no longer can afford to fall behind. And that means that I think the possible consequences for people, mostly ordinary people, the workers who will be replaced by AI, could be more profound and more extensive than anything we've ever seen in history before. I found it interesting, actually. I was looking up a chart by an economic think tank, an American one, looking at the rate of employment in America. And they were charting, and it's a graph. And generally, the rate of employment goes up over time. It dips occasionally, and it goes up again. And particularly, it spikes once women enter the marketplace. And their conclusion was that since women have been working en masse, the employment rate in America has been flirting with 80% on and off. It's always hovered around 80%, which is great to the economy. But they said new technologies, every time a major new technology is introduced, there is a huge dip in the employment rate, and it usually translates to millions of people in America. So that could be tens of millions worldwide, if not hundreds of millions, with something as extensively impactful as AI. It made me laugh, though, in their conclusion. They said they were describing how new technologies lead to unemployment, but this is never as bad as people think. For example, when this technology was introduced in 1930, there was unemployment, and over time it recovered. And I was like, wait a minute, the Great Depression? hold it. I know the Wall Street crash caused the Great Depression, but you just kind of flippantly dismissed this great example of new technology leading to unemployment. And, you know, there's a reason people look at the 1930s and don't want to go back there. It's because it was 10 years of misery and mass starvation and death. Yeah.
I feel like we say, like, in lots of companies, AI is going to be used to enhance productivity. But I can't help but feel like that's just not going to be the case with a lot of massive companies where it could just do the job. And it makes more sense to reduce the workforce. Look at Amazon, for example. They are already trying to introduce robots into their factories. The problem with them is they're highly specialized and, you know, they can only do certain very basic tasks. I'm on an article for MIT Review, and it says, it lists like some of the big advancements in AI in 2024. One of them that they mention is generative AI's second wave, which is video. And that's already, we've already started to see
that.
Now. Yeah. And that was already like a crazy, crazy scary technology. But one of them is multitasking robots. And that's going to be a kind of like the next big thing, is introducing these kind of AI technologies into robotics. Yeah. Because robots, you look at like the Boston Dynamics robots, they are programmed for very basic things. Like they program them exactly to do their little dances or whatever they do with them. Whereas using AI models in their training could allow them to do a variety of things and learn how to do those things on the fly. So, I mean, I'm not saying this will happen in the next year, but like how many years, given how fast this technology has been advancing, until Amazon starts using this in their warehouse and actually realizes, you know what, maybe we could cut our workforce in half and just have the other half supporting the robots that we've got.
And this is it, because there is no governing regulation. And it doesn't even have to be governments. It just has to be industry, you know, some kind of rule set that says, look, by all means, let's pursue this technology, but let's do it in a measured way and provide support for the people we're going to put out of work by creating this technology. And, you know, when the governments of the West, at least, can't be bothered to take care of the most vulnerable people in society, why would we expect them to do anything when the number of vulnerable people massively increases because of unemployment skyrocketing because technology has suddenly replaced them? Mm. And my concern is, you've touched upon it, but it's a simple question of people who are going to be replaced by technology need to retrain in another job.
Yeah.
Can they retrain fast enough? Well, and will those job opportunities exist at the end of that training for them to still survive in the world?
Well,
because they need a job in order to live in our society.
Yeah. I think that's the kind of difference between AI and other technological revolutions that have happened in the past, which is that an AI update could suddenly put millions of people in one day out of work. And I think it's the scale. The scale is kind of unprecedented. What happens when cars become fully autonomous using AI? Like genuinely, what happens to the millions of taxi drivers, the millions of delivery drivers, public transportation? And that could happen so quickly. And then suddenly you have a huge amount of people out of work. There doesn't seem to be any kind of plan in place for people to support that. I would like to steer away at the moment from all the political stuff, because this is mainly about where the technology is going to be in the next year and 10 years. So I'd like to kind of discuss some predictions, if that's okay.
Cool. Yeah.
So Bernard Marr, who's a futurist, he wrote an article in Forbes the other day suggesting what some of the biggest AI trends in the next 10 years will be. One of them, he says, is going to be artificial general intelligence, which we've spoken about.
It's going to happen, he thinks, in the next 10 years.
By 2034, we might have reached what we now consider true artificial general intelligence. And this doesn't mean sentient robots or anything, but enhancing the current AI systems to work more intelligently and autonomously on everyday tasks. So this will be AI will be more intuitive. We won't have to request specific things with ChatGPT. It will just kind of get to learn us and our routines and be more effective and understand us a little better, anticipate our needs way better than, you know, we at the moment we have to ask it what it wants from us.
Yeah.
We have to ask it what we want. Whereas in the next 10 years, there'll be a general intelligence that kind of knows what we want. He also suggests that by 2034, it's very possible there'll be a fusion of quantum computing and artificial intelligence, which could kick off a new era of supercomputing and scientific discovery. So quantum computing...
It's been around for a good number of years, but it hasn't produced much, I think. Yeah,
it hasn't really kind of nothing tangible at the moment, really. In terms, it's kind of like fusion, I guess. There's more just like experiments and brief breakthroughs, but
yeah, lots of experimental research.
You know, it's always a couple of years away, isn't it? Or a couple of decades away. But quantum computing has the potential to vastly speed up computation speeds. Using AI algorithms, for example, could quickly solve optimization problems that would take far longer using computers, classical computers. So just using AI basically to improve quantum computing. However, the emergence of quantum computing, he writes, would also create significant challenges for society, such as super powerful AI augmented computers. What does that mean for security and encryption? Like, they could brute force any kind of password in microseconds. Yeah.
Well, this goes back to what you said, thinking, what kind of regulation is there except to just not have it?
Right.
And you protect yourself from the thing that will always outstrip what we can do. Yeah.
And he just writes at the end of the section, let's hope that society's come up with some robust solutions to these problems.
Great.
And yeah, he also said, or he says that some people have predicted that the sheer power of quantum computing, along with a kind of integration into AI, would basically mean that our privacy disappears completely. There is no way to keep information private, and privacy would effectively disappear.
Well, that's scary.
Yeah. He also talks about AI-powered superhumans, and I think this is kind of like using AI, like we've mentioned, using AI in day-to-day jobs and things to kind of enhance our productivity. Yeah.
But when if he says super-powered human, what does he mean by that?
Well, in the literal sense, getting all cyberpunk here, advances in AI-augmented prosthetics could give us mechanical limbs or exoskeletons, making us far stronger, more physically capable than we are today. Camera optical implants could improve our vision, make the decline of eyesight in old age a thing of the past. Yeah. Artificial intelligence tools could give us insights into behaviors and human-to-human interactions, which could help increase our empathy and emotional intelligence. So he's suggesting that AI tools could exist that, could be helpful for, like, with people's social skills. And I guess this is kind of positive areas of AI. I don't know.
Yeah, I think, didn't we, I feel like on a previous podcast with Martin, we were talking about something to do with AI and how an AI companion could really help people with learning difficulties or who are on the autism spectrum.
Yeah, I think that's that's a kind of understated positive that AI will have.
Yeah.
Even with, like, you get chatbots now. One of the big things in 2024 that people have predicted is customized chatbots, which you're already kind of seeing, like, apps and things offering, like, your AI personal assistant, and, like, you can make your own AI buddy. And I think that that's going to be a big thing in the next few years.
I think AI, like any new technology, has wonderful potential, and AI probably more than most, because, like you said, this almost incomprehensible potential for AI to solve problems and find solutions and discover new things that as humans we're not capable of even anticipating the problem. Yeah, thank you for reading that, because that's a reminder that yes, absolutely, I think both of us are on the page that AI is inherently not a bad thing.
He also does predict that it could be used by 2034. AI may be firmly entrenched in law enforcement.
Oh yeah,
talking about the Minority Report.
Oh, I see.
Predicted crimes. But generally, I'm sure artificial intelligence could be used in a not too dissimilar way. Or maybe even legislating, being used in government to create policies.
That would be terrible, I think.
You think that would be terrible? But if you're taking out the... God, I'm about to sound like Lex Luthor or something. If you take the human element out of making decisions, then
it depends entirely on the AI,
right? It's not bias at all then, I guess.
So we're talking about a hypothetical perfect AI system. I think I mentioned this on an episode of A Little More Interesting some months ago. I went to a talk by the head of the AI Institute in Oxford University. Yeah, he runs it, and he was giving a talk. He's a professor, philosophy professor, actually. And his major concern was, he said he hasn't really got a problem with the technology of AI, and the whole existential threat of general artificial intelligence, he says, doesn't concern him, because he doesn't think we're actually going to reach that anytime soon, and he doesn't think it's going to be that bad when it does arrive. What he thinks, his preoccupation is, there is no ethical framework underpinning the development of AI technology as it currently stands. And he said, we've already lost the race, but we can start to limit the damage by introducing a set of ethics to govern the development of AI technology. And the example he used was that in America, one of the eastern states, I can't remember which, there's a company building an AI judge to reduce the workload that judges have with a lot of minor cases.
Oh, yeah, I remember this. Yeah,
you remember this now, yeah. And the company that built the AI had simply trained the AI based on all the past cases that the judges currently sitting had overseen. Mm. And they said, to prove how good it was, they got a bunch of lawyers in the room and they said, you lawyers, you know these judges and you know the law. You predict, here are a bunch of cases, you predict how these judges are going to decide in each of these cases. And these are minor crimes, so there's no jury involved. It's the judge. And then the cases happened and the AI beat the lawyers in every single case. I think it was the lawyers got something like half of them correct and the AI got every single one correct. And the company said, look, we can build an AI judge. But when they delved into how the AI was making that decision, it had basically just analyzed all of the cases presided by each judge. And they had looked at which judge was judging which case and then compared it to their past results and said, this judge tends to rule this way. Rather than actually looking at the case itself and saying, this person of this age with this background committed this crime and this crime was this severe and therefore merits this punishment. That's not at all what the AI did.
The AI just looked at the data as a whole.
Yeah. And this was the point this philosophy professor was making in this talk and said that at the moment there's no framework that obliges AI developers to develop a perfect AI so that it actually evaluates things from the ground up as a rational being as opposed to just taking a law of averages, the way that ChatGPT just farms the internet for answers and spews them out at you, which means it's quite open to saying some outrageous things, depending on what the prompt is. But I'm optimistic about the potential AI has to change society and advance humanity at such an accelerated rate that I can't even imagine where we could be in 2080 with the help of AI. It's astonishing. However, I'm pessimistic that humans are in charge of implementing AI, and therefore it's going to be a shit show.
And on that note, I feel like maybe that's where we end, on a very pessimistic note. But let us know what you think of this discussion and AI in the comments down below. Sorry to leave on such a bleak note, but would you like the answer to the riddle?
I would love the answer to the riddle. We didn't go into the whole Skynet Terminator discussion, so, you know, at least that's something.
We didn't mention robots.
We did, but only in the whole industrial sense.
I think robots wiping us out with like machine guns and stuff is almost better than them just making us obsolete. You know, there's something cleaner.
Yeah, at least we can see the enemy. Yeah.
So yes, the riddle again. Buzzing little hummer, busy all the summer. No time to play, no time to shirk, because no man can do her work. Any ideas? Oh,
so that last line is really intriguing because it specifies the genders. I'm like, what does that mean? So is it a queen bee?
It's just a bee, yeah. But now the last line is kind of like misleading, a bit misleading, isn't it? So aren't most of the bees, except for the queen, aren't they all men?
Yeah, I thought they were men. Maybe I'm wrong. You have to look that up now.
I mean, calling a bee men is weird. Male, I guess.
Yeah, I suppose, yeah. But
big burly man. Yeah. Anyways, well, thank you for that discussion, Robin.
Thank you for that riddle. Thank you for the discussion. And thanks for bringing some actual facts to the table.
Hopefully, AI doesn't wipe us all out. Fingers crossed it won't. Fingers crossed it'll be something else. No, I'm sure it won't. I'm sure it won't, and I'm sure it will be good. But, Robin, thank you so much for this discussion. And we shall see you next time.
See you next time.
Bye.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments. River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand. Through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.